WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Whether or not you know you are the need of instruction, it don't take no Einstein to figure out that. Well, you've been peeping and hiding, slipping and sliding, living in vain, selling that crack, and that's a natural fact. Well, I'm gonna get your sucker, dirty mother.
Don't you say that.
I'm gonna teach you the crime, just don't pay. I'm gonna get your sucker, dirty mother.
Don't you say that.
I'm gonna steal your case till I put you away.
That's the theme from the film I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. It spoofs black exploitation films of the 70s like Shaft, Superfly, and Cleopatra Jones. Sucker just came out on home video, and my guest is the film's writer, director, and star, Keenan Ivory Wayans. Wayans co-wrote and co-starred in Robert Townsend's film Hollywood Shuffle, a satire about black stereotypes in Hollywood. Wayans also co-wrote Eddie Murphy's concert film Raw, and like Murphy, Wayans began his career as a stand-up comic. We talked first about I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker.
The basic story is about a character named Jack Spade, who is played by myself, who comes home from the army after 10 years and finds out his brother's been killed from an overdose of gold chains. And he decides to do something about it, and he rounds up all of his old heroes, and they go after Mr. Big, who's a big gold distributor in town.
Hey, man, who are we waiting on?
Kung Fu Joe. He'll be here in a minute.
Who is he?
This is Jack Spade, that new blood I was talking about.
What? Your new blood. You ever kill a man before?
No, but I've been trained to go out.
Hey, man, no way. He's got to get all our asses killed, man. Look at him. He look funny, man. Look how he's looking at us.
Hey, look, man, I can handle myself.
Oh, yeah?
Well, what makes you think you can be a black hero?
I'm an ex-football player.
I thought of this as an homage as much as it was a parody. I figured you must have seen a lot of the black exploitation films.
It was exactly that. I lived on those movies. They were, and that was what we did on the weekends. We went down to the theaters with a couple of dollars and saw like three movies and spent the day. So I got a chance to see all those films in their heyday.
One of the retired heroes who gets back into the action after your character says, "Help me find Mr. Big." This character says, "The people said I should retire, that I was too violent, that I was a bad image for the kids." Do you think that that's the rap that black exploitation films got, and do you think that that rap was deserved?
Well, that's the film that is the rap that they got. No, I don't think that it was the rap that they deserved. I think that the term became a blanket term, and it was used to describe almost every film that had a black cast. And what you have in any genre film is good and bad. An example is horror. You have Alfred Hitchcock, which is classic. And then you have Friday the 13th, Part 80, which is basically a formula picture that's slapped together with no real creative integrity, designed to exploit an existing audience. And the same thing happened with films that depicted black life. They had the good ones and they had the bad ones. Shaft is not an exploitation movie. Shaft, as a matter of fact, was a monumental film. I mean, if you look at it, it was the first time a black man had been in a lead that displayed him with any aggression or any sexuality. Secondly, it was the first time that a black director had ever directed a major motion picture for a studio. That was Gordon Parks and MGM. It was also the first time that a black had ever won an Oscar for a score of a film, Isaac Hayes. So that was a great accomplishment. And when we look back, Shaft will be classified as an exploitation movie.
So you think in the attempt to get more positive role models, the opposite happened. There were no blacks on the screen for a long time.
Yeah, I think in the attempt to eliminate the negative, everybody overreacted, and as a result, abandoned the group of films that we had out there that represented us in a very good fashion.
Well, in your film, your character approaches all these former action heroes and brings them out of retirement. You literally did that to make the movie.
You went to Isaac Hayes
and to Jim Brown and to Bernie Casey and asked them to be in your movie. And I was wondering what kind of reactions you got from all of them, telling them that you were going to do this part parody, part homage to the movies that they were in.
Well, everybody who's in the film came on with the same enthusiasm about the movie that I had. They all thought it was funny and all looked at it as a chance to have fun making fun of themselves. There were those that I approached that didn't find it funny.
Your character is asked by one of these retired heroes what makes him think that he could be an action hero, and he says, I used to be a football player. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's a direct reference to Jim Brown who's in the movie. Do you think that was funny, or was he offended by it?
That was the line that made him want to do the movie.
Oh, great.
Yeah, because it epitomized the action films. The image of the black male at that particular time was the large, physically imposing, and very macho black men, and most of them were ex-football players, i.e. Jim Brown, Fred Williamson, Bernie Casey, Rosie Greer, Carl Weathers, you know, all came out of playing football. The transition was into being the action heroes.
Was this a hard production to sell?
When I conceived it, it would have been impossible to sell.
When did you conceive it?
Like 5-6 years ago. But by the time I had written it and decided to take it around, I had already done Hollywood Shuffle and produced Raw. And with those two credits, it made it easier for me to go in and sit down with a studio. And the real difficulty in receiving financing was just convincing the studio that it could be done for the budget that I had proposed, and convinced them that I'd, as a first-time director, be able to handle all of these responsibilities. And that was, I guess, the hardest thing.
When you were taking the screenplay around trying to get money to get it produced and everything, were there any suggestions that in order to really make back the money, you'd need to draw in a white audience too? In order to get a white audience, there'd have to be more white characters or a white sidekick or something like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the suggestions was to have Anthony Michael Hall play my stepbrother and have him act black the entire film. And my response was, I have 60 real black people in the movie. Why have him in there acting black, you know?
Were there any in-jokes that you reluctantly took out?
No.
Good. Okay. You've done some acting outside of your own film. You were in Star 80 and have been in several TV episodes. One of the very funny things in Hollywood Shuffle was a scene black actor school where everybody's trained to act more black.
Right.
And you know, there's lots of scenes where blacks are doing auditions and they're told to act more black. Did that ever happen to you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was... For me, Hollywood was when I realized that I wasn't black enough. It was like, here I am, a guy born and raised in the projects of New York City from a family of 10 children. I go to Tuskegee Institute in Alabama. I go to Los Angeles and audition, and they tell my agent, well, he wasn't black enough. And I go, boy, I can't see getting any blacker than this, you know? So I didn't understand that. But what I learned was that they were speaking in terms of the, not the reality of being black, but what Hollywood portrays as being black. And I never had enough of that to get particular roles that I'm glad I didn't get. I've been fortunate that most of the parts that I've gotten have just been regular people. You know, I didn't play the thugs and the pimps or slave stuff. I never got those. I was never black enough.
Did anyone ever give you directions on how to be more black?
Oh, sure. Well, I had a director scream at me to bug my eyes out more.
Really?
And as the camera was pushing into my face, and he kept screaming, more eyes, more eyes, more eyes. And I just had to stop and say, hey, you know, my eyes can't get no bigger than this. You know, I don't know what it is you expect from me, but I can't do that.
Now, you co-wrote Hollywood Shuffle and co-starred in it. How is that film seen in Hollywood now? Is that seen as a success, and do you think that that's helping to open doors?
It's definitely seen as a success, and both critically and financially for the Goldwyn Studios, and also image-wise for the Goldwyn Studios, it you know makes them seem like innovators and renegades, and so it helps, you know, that helps the prestige of a studio as well when you have a small film do well, you know, especially a film like that where most people wouldn't have taken a chance on that. It really makes, you know, like I said, makes the studio look good. And anytime you do that, everyone wants to follow suit. Everyone wants to look good too. So it does open doors for the next crop of filmmakers like myself to come along and get their projects done. And the success of this film will open doors for others as well.
Thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.